Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am Ajito Ryo Master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
A second, really? We're just gonna play the same old tired opening? It's baseball season. I think we can do something a little bit more special for this anime.
You know the crowd getting wild cause they worry going. Yeah. We here to carry on in case you forgot. They be swinging and banging up at the trap. Oh. I sent you to the top from the bottom, let the haters disperse. Tonight. Your critics and your rhetoric is sounding rehearsed. The first observant way. See it in their faces. Bartlett, A-Bar, Aki round the bases. So brisk and gross, swinging for the cheap seats. Fear Scott Cashmere cause he brings heat. Now look at CC and give him the word. Carl Crawford stole second but he's standing on third. Wait, you ain't heard. Up them, we'll run him down. Oh, yeah. Navarro can stop, pop and gun him down. This ain't a run around cause the experts say make way for them Tampa Bay Rays. What's up?
The Trap Boys in the building. What's up? The Trap Boys. What's up? The Trap Boys.
Now this is how we get it. See, we don't back down. Plus it's a full count. He about to blow it out the truck.
Hey there, my Tsunami Generation, and welcome to another episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas, Primetime Mattis, and I welcome you to baseball season, as the opening might have alluded to. Hopefully that opening also alluded you to the fact that we're covering a baseball animation today. Because, hey, it's the start of baseball season. Because, you know, I play right field. It's important to know. You gotta know how to catch. You gotta know how to throw. That's why I play in right field. We know where the dandelions grow. Making it great. You know, as I said in another baseball video I did about a year ago, yes, it's baseball season. I can, the memories of going to, you know, Tropicana Field since I no longer live in Tampa anymore, you know, the smell of the ballpark, Frank's, you know, a cool beer in the hand. It's like, as I said before, watch my Tampa Bay Rays whoop those Boston Red Sox ass, which, anybody who follows sports and baseball, last year pretty much happened when Rays came back and took the wild card spot from said Boston Red Sox and what turned out to be one of the biggest choke jobs in history down the stretch. It was pretty awesome. You know, as Jim Rome said, congratulations on proving me right, Red Sox. You did it. That was an awesome night. But now back to... Again, we're talking about baseball. Get to it a little bit more, but what is today's animation that we're talking about? Well, we're talking about season one of Big Windup. I'm not even going to, you know, attempt to pronounce its Japanese name, but that is the English name that Funimation gave a baseball anime that came out of Japan in, I want to say, the first season released 2008, maybe 2009, but lean more towards maybe end of 2008. I only say that because the second season came out in 2010. But Funimation didn't pick up that second season. We'll get to all of that later, because trust me, I have some stuff to talk about with that. But Big Windup, which, as I'll get to with synopsis, is a 26-episode series that follows a young high school baseball team. So, I didn't even know about this. There really wasn't any promotion for this series. I just found it on Funimation. I'm like, what's this about? Ooh, baseball. Let me watch an episode. And as I watched it, I just got caught up into it. And it's one of those surprise animes that you just find by looking around. And it's just absolutely awesome in my mind. You know, it just, every time I watch it, it just gives me that feeling that I can remember of playing Little League baseball and everything. And because of that, I felt, instead of emails and iTunes comments, since, you know, we don't have any emails or iTunes comments, I thought what we could do is I would talk about some of my past baseball experience, you know, Little League and that stuff. Because I have some good stories. I have a couple of good stories. You know, anybody who played Little League baseball always has their Little League story. You know, these are my war stories. Down in the trenches. I mean, earliest one I could probably remember is playing AAA. You know, there's an aid disparity, and so, actually, that came the year later, but, you know, I only got to play 1 year in AAA because I joined late, and, like I said, I had this aid discussion because my birthday was in September, so it actually led me moving to the majors the next year, even though I probably should still be in AAA. It's actually what led me to be on the AAA All-Star team. But that's all. We'll get to that in a second. But I remember my AAA team, we were the Marlins. And I remember I had a game where I went 4-for-4, which included a triple, as I basically hit the back fence. And a beautiful double play I turned. I was playing third base, which was my position. And a kid hit a line drive literally down the third base line. And again, I hold my glove on my right hand. So anybody who knows baseball, that would mean I would have to cross over. And I was playing pretty much off third base. So I actually had to dive to catch it. And I made this wonderful diving catch and tagged the bag at the same time because there was a runner on third. And got a beautiful double play all by myself. So, yeah, I know. I'm preaching myself. What can I say? There's not many times I get to gush about, you know, past experience that are awesome. You know, I remember playing in majors. I believe we were the Braves, and we were playing at the Red Sox. This was about a year later, and I was facing basically the best pitcher in the league, and he was, you know, the coach's son who pitched. And he actually had this slider, which got everybody. So he throws this slider, and I remember bending down and stretching out because it was so far out of the strike zone to get it. And the ball almost went over the fence, and I got a double. And that's a good memory I have. I do remember we also had this female umpire that everybody hated because we used to call her Super Bitch because that's what she was. We hated her. I mean, she almost disqualified us because we were just chatting too much in the dugout. That's... By the way, I hate Little League umpires. They're the most ridiculous, useless people in the world as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I guess we need them to play Little League, but this... Them and parents, when it comes to Little League baseball, are the most annoying people on the face of the planet. But the sort of the last two stories I think I'll talk to you about. One... When I played in an All-Star game, we actually lost our first game when I was on the All-Star team because of a rainout situation that was ridiculous and never should have happened, and we pretty much got screwed. So we had to play the rest of the games in the loser bracket just to get to the finale. And so we're at the game before the final game, semifinals of the, or should I say finals of the loser bracket, that is. And so we were playing. And, you know, eighth inning, they're up to bat, their team, and they just, It's just this bad inning because they keep hitting in the gap and the gap and the gap, and they end up taking the lead. So I get up. I'm the second person up. There's one out, and I just get the perfect pitch. And anybody who ever played baseball, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's right down the middle, in the middle of the plate, the perfect pitch. And I jump on it like a pervert on a $1 hooker. And I just, it's the perfect hit. And I just watch as this ball goes and deep left center. And this ball goes and goes. And I watch the outfitter, he's jumped the cage. And he can't even jump the cage, so he's just like at the top. And he has his glove literally just over the fence. And I watch as the ball goes and goes. And then the wind changes. And I watch as the ball hits his glove and he makes the catch. And to this day, I refuse to acknowledge he made the catch. As far as I'm concerned, I hit his glove. That was the closest I ever came to a home run. But, speaking of hitting people's gloves, that's my final story. Really, one of the lessons that sort of got to play baseball on sort of a team level. And it was when I went to a summer camp. In fact, I went to a Jewish summer camp. So, me at about 100 pounds overweight, I was still the most athletic kid out there. And so I was like, oh, how can you say that about Jewish people? I'm like, well, I'm Jewish myself. I know how Jewish people play sports. Trust me. Even at 100 pounds overweight, I was the most athletic kid there. Add to the fact that they were all from Chicago, and so they have no understanding of how to win a game. that's cruel. I know. I apologize. But we were playing softball, and so... And they had this team where they'd play like softball and that stuff, you know, with the older cabin once a year. And I was like, so we were practicing. So I got up for batting practice. Kid pitches me the ball. First pitch, I take it right back up center. I almost take his head off. Second time he hits it again, I hit right back up the center. I hit him dead in the chest. He's on the ground. He's in pain. And it's a horrible thing to laugh at, but it's like, it sends a message. So the next day when they ask for people, you know, to pitch for me, because it's my turn to batting prep, because I was actually doing the pitching, nobody wanted to pitch to me, and they couldn't get anybody to pitch to me. And even the counselors didn't want to pitch to me. So they took a kid, they took him behind, and then I'm not paying attention. But when I see the kid come back out, I realize that they took him to the shed, and they dressed this kid up in the full catcher gear. And when I say full catcher gear, I mean the mask, the chest protector, the shin guards. And I'm sure if they had time, they would have found an athletic cup. The kid was so afraid to pitch to me, he wouldn't pitch to me without catcher gear on. So here's this kid shaking in his boots with catcher's gear on. And he loves a high arcing softball pitch. And he gets on the ground. The only thing that's up is his glove. This will come into play in a second. Now, mind you, I'm actually not trying to hit it to back at the pitcher. I'm actually trying to actually crush the ball deep in the air. But I just have such a good swing that I naturally take it back up the middle. So, sure enough, I hit the pitch. It goes right up the middle. And it hits his glove, knocks him down, and he makes the catch. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. I couldn't help but laugh at it. Yeah, I know I went way too much into probably my baseball war stories, but I kind of just wanted to show how much I love baseball and sort of that I had this knowledge of baseball. And it's one of the things I love about this show, but we'll get into that later. So with that, let's get on to synopsis and cast. First cast, Sean Michael Teague plays Ren Mihashi. Greg Ayers played Takiya Abe. Cynthia Kranz plays Maria Momo. Tob Hapcorn plays Yuichiro Tajima. Joe McDonald plays Asura Hanai. Aaron Dasmuk plays Yuto Sakaguchi. Chris Brunette plays Kosuke Uzume. Anthony Bowling plays Shoji Sugiyama. Jean-Luc Hester plays Fumiki Mizutani. Chris Kasson plays Katsushi Oki. Scott Hines plays Shintaro Nishihiro. Chirimi Lea plays Chiyo Shinoka. Chuck Huber plays Tsuyoshi Singa. And Christopher Bavanes plays Yoshiro Hamada. Wow, I can't believe I said that with such ease. By the way, I forgot to say the legendary Greg Ayers. I just wanted to make sure I add that because that's, again, it's in that voice acting god pantheon that we sometimes talk about. Synopsis, well, there's not much more to say. Big Windup follows the story of the young Nishishari freshman high school team. It's their first year playing hardball, and it follows them as they try to make it through the summer Koshikin tournament. And really only kind of follows them in two games, but we'll get to more on that in a second. Since they covered their first practice game and their first game in the tournament, again, that 4 minutes in the second season continues the rest of their job in the tournament. But we're only talking about the first season here. So, with that being said, let's get right on to our review of Big Windup. Music. Now with music, we're going to start off first with openings and closings, because there's some great opening and closings. Music-wise, again, it's that sort of traditional upbeat, high-tempo sort of opening and sort of the low-tempo, low-beat closing. I'll start with the closings, because they're good, and they do a great job at what they do. And they're fun to look at, and they have some great animation. They're really some great artistic pieces here. And before I go any further, let me make mention to this. The Big Windup story, based off a manga and story that was done by a female, so which I find really impressive, and she did a wonderful job really getting into sort of the baseball addicts of it. But we'll talk about more about that later. But, the closing did its job. It does a great job of cooling down, but for me, the best parts are definitely the openings, both openings. The second one is Shoshi in Line, and then the second one is called Dramatic by the Baseball Kids, as I stall for Tom to look at my music file. excuse me for a moment as I go all the way to... Dramatic, I don't actually... By the Baseball Bears, excuse me. Yeah. That's who you actually heard in the break just a moment ago. But, God, and as you probably heard, just wonderful song. They just sort of match this sort of baseball theme as well with both songs. I absolutely love the opening and closings with this anime, And like I said, with the closings, the cool down, And I don't love them as much as I do the openings, but they're both good. But you're just dramatic. Just the way the guitar plays in that song is just excellent. And then with Shoshin Line, you know, just has this dramatic flair within the song of, you know, this sort of brotherhood. And this is what both songs really bring to the table. Both songs really talk about and bring you into this idea of the brotherhood of the team. And it's a common theme you'll feel throughout this series. You know, this common bond of brotherhood that you feel, you know, with Shoshin Line, the tunes, how each thing is connected upon the other within the melody. It just feels awesome, and it gets you pumped. It's also music that you could, you know, another thing about it is you could sort of picture and hear this music in a stadium. That's the other thing about it, is I can so picture this music in a stadium. So that's another thing I like it. Now, as far as the overall score is concerned, it's a very limited score, kind of like last week. I would say maybe 10 pieces of music, really. There's nearly not that many. Really, they let the silence, and more importantly, sort of the surrounding sounds, to an extent, be a soundtrack, as I'll get to in a second. But, you know, the songs that are there, it's very strange, because it's one of those rare occasions where it's obviously mood music, excuse me. But, you know, it doesn't feel manipulative. You know, it does exactly what it's supposed to do. You know, and you have sort of, it's also sort of that classical sort of sports melodies. And, you know, you can tell when something dramatic is going to happen. And really, that's what the music does. It sort of cues you in on important moments. You know, when it's sort of a down moment, there's sort of sorrowful music, you know. But it doesn't feel manipulative. And more importantly, when something big is about to happen, you know, there's a tune that plays and you know something big is going to happen. And you can tell for which team, because there's a tune for something big is going to happen for the other team and a tune that something big is going to happen for the main protagonist. But, you know, again, very limited score. As I said, they really let sort of the surrounding sounds, and especially within the games, the sounds of the game sort of be the soundtrack for the series, which I love, because I love the sounds of baseball. Now, it's something that very rarely you get to see in sports anime, or for that matter, sports media, is people using the sounds of the game as a soundtrack and really have people feel what it's like to be in a baseball game. And that's something I really love. You know, you absolutely feel like you're in a high school baseball game, whether it be the sound of the sort of the bugs, the cheer of the crowd, and for that matter, you know, the tunes that the bands are playing, because, you know, you have, and sort of the fan service that's within those tunes. Very rarely you get sort of fan service within the music itself. And in this case, you do, because, you know, you have the bands playing, you know, the Loop on the Third theme. They're playing Yankee Doodle, which has one of the funniest dances I'll ever see done to Yankee Doodle. I think it's episode 16, I wanted to say. It's by the Tosai backups. Yankee Doodle is playing, and they're just in this line doing this. It's absolutely hilarious. I didn't stop laughing. But you have Lupin the Third. You have a theme from Yamato. I think Tosai's theme, because I'm trying to remember it off the top of my head. Why am I blanking on this? You know, because I know the theme that Nishiura has, but there's a tune that gets used a lot by Tosai during sort of the later half of the series. I think that's Akira Fukube, excuse me, tune there. For those who know Akira Fukube, he he did sort of the Godzilla music. And in fact, I think the tune is from a Godzilla movie, but I can't put my finger on it. It's either from that or it's from like an Ultraman show or something like that. But it's like, I've heard this theme somewhere before in some type of giant monster or sort of Super Sentai type of series. But, you know, as it would make sense, mind you, that a sort of the band that's at the game, you know, if you've ever been to sort of a high school football game, you know, the band is playing, they're not just playing sort of the traditional sort of stadium music, they're playing, you know, pop culture music. Like, you know, you go to a game today and you'll hear them play Dynamite. You know, you'll hear them play a sort of pop culture song that's on the radio. You know, back in my day of playing, you know, they were playing Hot in Here. And they were playing TV show themes. So, again, it's very much like what a high school band would be playing. And it adds to sort of the realism and the feel of being at a high school baseball game. And so that's what I mean by the whole fact that they're allowing sort of the sounds of the game, the sort of the bands playing and the cheer of the crowd and, you know, the sound of rain and all that stuff and the, you know, hitting of the mitt be the sort of soundtrack of the game. The actual score itself, when you hear it to an extent, is very low key, with the exception of when they're sort of announcing a big moment coming up. But yeah. As far as if somebody would pick up the soundtrack, I only think people like myself, who's absolutely nuts about music, would pick up the soundtrack. But it doesn't mean it's bad. Again, music is just absolutely excellent, and it just adds to what this series is about. With that, we're going to take a quick break and have a word from our sponsors, and when we come back, we're going to go into animation.
Everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And welcome back, and let's get right into animation. Let's talk about the overall style of Big Windup. Very traditional anime style, or at least I should say new age anime style, very proportionate character designs and everything. There is this sort of sketch to sort of the original manga artist design who I wish I would have gone and gotten her name now, but I don't want to stall again for time to look on Wikipedia, which is horrible to me. But, you know, I've actually seen the manga. It follows her design very closely. And sort of very promotion characters, very realistic. You definitely feel like you're at a real place in the real world. It's kind of like, if you've seen The Secret of Arrietty, it's something somebody else said. No, you forget that you're actually watching an animation and feeling like you're in a real place. And it's definitely the same thing here. All of the art makes you feel like you're at a real place and looking at real human beings. And it's absolutely beautiful to look at. You know, and the great thing that they do is they add that with some cartoony movements, you know, especially with Mihashi. Which, again, leads to a lot of comedic moments. But again, it's the sort of the classic face palms and that stuff that's added to it. But for overall, they keep sort of realistic-looking characters. The probably one exception to that would be Momo. But, yeah, we'll get to her. Trust me, we'll get to her. Because, you know, I was talking about fan service earlier. And that's already probably got people shaking their heads, but that's here nor there. But yeah, I love the artistic style. I love sort of the attention to detail and the realism. You know, I mean, just attention like dirt on cleats is absolutely beautiful to look at. You know, as somebody who is a baseball fan like I am, you know, it's very beautiful to look at. Let's move on to character designs, and let's start off with the pitcher, Ren Mihashi. And I love sort of how he's sort of a design of a California pitcher, because that's really the first thing that, you know, sort of, it's more reddish blonde, but sort of that blonde, sort of big-haired pitcher. Yeah. Actually, you know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of that blonde, long-haired pitcher from the Bad News Bears, if you think about it. Except that his is more sort of puffy and everything like that, but yeah. I love that, you know, you have this pitcher. He's supposed to be this ace and everything, and he is the opposite of traditionally what you think of a pitcher. He's this little person. He's a small 50 kilos person. And I just love the design. Very cartoony sometimes, but it sort of matches his character personality, which we may or may not talk about later. But I love how the design matches his sort of, oh, what the hell, I'll talk about his personality now. He has that sort of, which is a change from what you would normally see when you have a pitcher in this type of story, where you'd have sort of, the pitcher would be this cocky, confident person. Here you, or say a cocky, confident person that has like no control over his pitches and he has to learn to control his pitches. Here, you have a pitcher who has complete control. He just has no confidence whatsoever. And it's this wonderful change, and you can really see it in the character designs. Takayama Abe is everything you would think a pitcher is supposed to be, and I love that. Very hard nose, you know, matches again his personality within the design. And that's something about all designs here, is that the personalities really match the designs here. You know, or just the designs match what their personality is here. You can tell what the person's personality is through their design. But, you know, Ave, you know, very hard-nosed design, you know, and yet a sign of intelligence. You know, he's the type of person you'd want being the catcher for your team. Yukichiro Tajima is, wow. Yeah, loved it. Just the hype. You feel the hyperactivity coming from him. This is a character that I'm probably most like. The one exception being is he's a whole lot skinnier than I am. When a whole lot skinnier, I mean by like 250 pounds. but like this was me in high school if I was actually 100 pounds lighter. But, like, this is sort of the character design I, like, wield to most. Just the fun, hyperactivity of the design. he's slim and everything, but at the same time, you can feel the power within him. Hanai, that was Hani. Japanese terms are so difficult to say. But Hanai, again, being that he's also the team captain, you know, he's also an outfielder. He has the design of somebody who would be in the outfielder. Someone who also might be the traditional cleanup hitter if Tajima wasn't such a, like, prodigy hitter. You know, you can see him being in that cleanup spot, and you definitely see why he comes after Tajima. So just the hard-nosed, very mature personality within him, even though sometimes he talks crass. You know, but you can see the leadership qualities within his character design. So I love that very much. Marnie and Momo. Again, props on this anime for having the head coach be a female, you know, which was something unique upon itself. I love that, you know, they have this where, like, oh, it's something different, a female is a head coach, and people look at it strange, not because, oh, females shouldn't be a head coach, but it's like, you don't see that all the time. And I sort of like that approach of it, by the way. We'll probably get more into that later. But, yeah, I love the fact that she has a design of her character that could lend itself to so many jokes. And really, there's not any jokes about it. I mean, let's just not mince words around it. She has some big boom booms. Bazookas. Gonads. Not gonads, but gananzolas. Melons. She has a big chest, if you don't know what I'm saying. And, yeah, they could have done jiggle physics with it. They didn't. And they could have made jokes about it, and really they didn't make it. I mean, this really, the only significant time I can think they even sort of acknowledge, like, oh my god, Momo has a big chest, is one time where the Tosai catcher is thinking about their female coach and he starts blushing. Which, I don't know about you, but I just want to know where this school is located, because I will transfer my child I will transfer my child to the school, and if he doesn't want to play baseball, he will stop playing baseball, because I want those parent-coaches conferences. That's all I'm saying right now. But she has a great design, a lot of maturity in the design of this sort of fun-loving person that just knows so much about baseball. She's like a female version of Joe Madden, who's the head coach of the Tampa Bay Rays, except that she's a whole lot younger. She's a woman, and she's really nothing like Joe Madden. Really, the sort of connection I made there was really towards mindsets, but we'll get into that later. And then there's the rest of the team, and really for the rest of the team, and for the other designs, you know, again, it goes back to that sort of realistic style. You can see their personality in their design, and you can also see what position they play within their design. And just overall for the designs, the design just of sort of normal kids, they feel like kids. I could go outside my door, around the block to the park, and see kids like that playing. Or should I say, go down the street to the local high school, which is just down the block from me, and see high school baseball players just like that. So yeah, it really lends itself. I love how the parents look. I think they hit the parents spot on, or as I like to call parents at a high school or little league baseball games, the mooses that are in the stable. There's a reference to a Bill Involv joke that nobody will get. But overall, you know, I love the designs. Let's move on to special effects. And with the special effects were done beautifully. You know, a large portion of the second half of this series takes place in rain. And they do a wonderful job of sort of this light to sort of light, heavy rain that's there, and it's coming down, but it's not hindering the game too much, and they're not calling the game. And it adds this great sort of feeling to that second half of the series. There's this mood and sort of drama that comes because of the rain, and a lot of that comes from the special effect that makes you believe in the fact that, like, ooh, they're really in some weather there. And so I love the special effects there, and it doesn't just go that. It's, you know, special effects of things like, you know, dirt, you know, flying, you know, when the ball hits the dirt and stuff like that, and just the little stuff like that. It's absolutely excellent. It's beautiful to look at. And then the backgrounds, you know, again, really the backgrounds here in this case are, you know, the baseball fields and, you know, the stadiums and the feel in and around sort of the baseball stadium. You know, it just sort of brings me into back to my Little League days and everything like that. And it feels like you're actually at a sort of high school baseball stadium. And I very much enjoy that. You know, that is done so excellently. And again, all of this leads to sort of the realism that we feel in what the overall theme of baseball is with this series. So, wonderful job on that. With that being said, we're going to move on to story, but we're not going to move on to it until we have another word from our sponsor. So we're going to have a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back with story.
December 7th.
Earth 2.
1941.
A world very much like our own, yet slightly different.
A date which will live in infamy.
A world at war.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
Following the Japanese sneak attack on Pearl Harbor, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt brought together the largest group of mystery men ever assembled to battle the Axis powers. Tales of the Justice Society of America presents the All-Star Squadron.
The Tales of the Justice Society of America, every Friday at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
And we're back, and let's go right into story. Let's talk about the overall theme of this series. And the overall theme, as far as I feel it, is, you know, again, it is high school baseball and sort of that feel of high school baseball, but it's also sort of this aspect of sort of the brotherhood of being on a team, which I very much appreciate, because that's sometimes something you don't get with sports animes that are out there. I mean, especially with the ones that are about singular sports, like Prince of Tennis, or any other type of sort of competition type of anime, like Pokemon and that stuff. It's like about the singular person. Here, it's just as much about sort of the brotherhood of the team. It's not that, oh, Mihashi is this really this great pitcher. It's Mihashi is this great pitcher. How does his ability affect the team? It's very much how, like, you know, last week we reviewed Kaleido Star, how really the series, as Lucid put it, was Sora's experience and how her experience affected other people. It's the same thing here. And it's this sort of brotherhood that you feel. You feel like you want to be a part of this team. You want to join this team because you want to be a part of sort of this brotherhood that forms. This partnership that sort of formed between, you know, Abe and Mihashi. You know, there's a brotherhood between, you know, of pitcher and catcher there. They are partners. You know, they have to trust each other. And they really go in depth into sort of the feelings of being able to trust one another. And that's definitely something you have to have when you're playing a sport, especially like baseball. You know, the pitcher and the catcher have to be able to trust each other, you know, to know what the other's doing to get the person out. You don't just get the person out because, hey, I threw a hard fastball. You know, the catcher and the pitcher working together as partner to know the hitter's tendencies to be able to throw to a spot to where he'll have a hard time hitting it, forcing him to maybe hit into a spot he won't like or hitting a ball to a place that will get him out. You know, and that's what you want to do in a baseball game. You either want to make him miss the pitch or you want to hit it into a situation where he'll be out, whether it be grounding to an infielder or hitting a pop fly or fly ball for that matter to an outfielder or infielder. You know, it very much goes into sort of that trust aspect and that brotherhood. And really that's what makes you continue to watch the series. You love to see people who are generally friends with each other. You know, they didn't start out friends, but they become friends real quickly. And it really makes you believe into this brotherhood of this team. You know, they're all out trying to help each other for the ultimate goal of winning. You know, and more importantly, to play baseball because it's the game they love. And it really does a great job making baseball look so much better than actually baseball sometimes makes itself look. You know, and add to the fact that it's covering it from a more amateur level. You know, it's not the, you know, professional level here. It's covering it from the high school. So you have that sense of amateurism and sort of, it just feels authentic. It's a joy to watch. At least for me, it was a joy to watch. Another thing this series goes into is they go into some very technical aspects about hitting and pitching and stuff like that, especially when they're talking about Mihashi's, you know, fastball. And I love that. I love that they take time to sort of explain in a very simple way, mind you, you know, how his pitches work, you know, how a curve works, how a screwball and a slider works, and, you know, the whole thing about, you know, a sinker and all of that stuff. I love when sports animes go into the technical aspect, because not all of them do. But I love when they go into the technical aspect and you can learn about the game. Because that actually, I believe, makes the anime very capable to be put on a television, both in Japan and America. Because you're not just, you know, watching this sort of great story about brotherhood. You're also learning technical aspects that can be taken into the real world and applied. You know, there can probably be somebody who can make a fastball, appear to float. That could probably so totally happen. Yeah. You know, Tajman, you're showing how Tajman is able to get hits. You know, in that first game, you know, when he goes up to bat, and he does that thing where he stands in the back of the box, and he tiptoes up to get a hit on that forkball. You know, that was a beautiful thing to look at. And, of course, at the end of that last game, to where he's waiting for the sinker comes, and he sort of releases his grip on the bat and puts it to the very end to get that hit. It's beautiful, and it goes to a very technical aspect about playing baseball that I personally like. To an extent, it's a form of fan service for all those who like baseball, like myself. I love baseball. I love talking about baseball. I love discussing baseball. You know, baseball is my third favorite sport to of all time, behind football and hockey, for that matter. But again, I love talking about it. And so I love the fact to go into sort of the technical aspects here of the game. And it's also something they do it in a way to where they can draw you into what they're talking about. It's not something that bores you. You know, it's not something to where, oh my God, they're talking about, just move on with the game or the practice or whatever the episode's about. You know, they actually go into the tent and make it engaging and enjoying, because they don't spend too much time on it, but just enough time to where you get what they're talking about. Next point I want to talk about is, I want to talk about the length of the game, because they don't do, like, 6 games in a series. They really only do 2 games, though they do let you know that they have a couple of practice games between the 2 games, but you know, you have that first practice game that spans from episode 3 to, I want to say, episode 12. You know, so that's 9 episodes right there. And then you have the Tosai game, which is the first game of the tournament, which spans from, I want to say, episode 16 or 15 to episode 25. Though, really, it's episode 24. So, again, 9 episodes, pretty much, for each game, to an extent. That's a lot of time to spend on the game. But, again, they focus on every aspect of the game. They go inning by inning within the game, and focus on every aspect of the game, because every inning is important. To put importance on every batter, on every pitch, on everything, and yet they do it in such a way, it adds such great drama and realism to what baseball is like. Baseball is not like football or hockey, where there's necessarily a time limit. But at the same point in time, you know, there is this sort of high tension to baseball, and they show you that with great success. It really adds to the drama. I applaud them for, they could have like rushed through it and just done like 10 games and show them go through it in the tournament, but instead they focused on every at bat and every pitch, and they really brought to the drama and the realism about what baseball is about, and it drew you in into what was happening on the field. You know, by going into what's in Mihashi's mind, what's in Abe's mind, what's in the batter's mind, what's going on in the, you know, the crowd, how the mothers are feeling, which, those mothers, that's like one of the most realistic things they got about baseball, especially youth baseball, is the mothers. Because I can tell you for a fact, mothers are exactly like that. But, so yeah, I absolutely love that they took a slow pace and really drew out the games. It really added to the drama and the excitement of the anime. With that being said, let's move on to comedy. Because another thing that, and this is part of what didn't make the series boring, is there was a lot of comedy. A lot of it comes from Mihashi and the fact that, you know, he, like I said before, he's a twist on sort of the way a pitcher is usually sort of shown. He's usually shown to be very confident, in fact, cocky, and to just doesn't have control. But here, he's a very mature individual. He just has no confidence because all the years he spent at his old school, you know, they picked on him and acted like he only got the job because of narcissism. Or I'm probably saying that word wrong, but basically, because his grandfather owned the school, he got to be the starting pitcher, so they hated him for it, and never get a chance to try to understand him or his pitches. You know, again, going to how great his pitches are, you know, and Abe, you know, just being amazed by his control and his ability to pitch and everything. Again, you go into that comedy, and a lot of that also adds to the fact of wanting you to feel like you want to be a part of that team. The masturbation jokes that are in this, again, it's not these outright, but, you know, things like, oh, man, I forgot to spank the steak. If I don't do it, I'll explode before I get home. And just go like, this by the way, Tajima, again, Tajima says all the funniest things in the series, and it's why I love him so much. And just him saying that, like, the second episode, and the guy's going, dude, shut up, there are women here. And at that, another thing is, you know, yeah, you have Momo that has a big chest and that you could lead to a fan service or something like that. But they don't really show anything. And also the fact that they sort of make the... Again, it's like the Fool in Collider Star, like we reviewed last week. Here, they sort of make some sort of relaxed sort of sexual jokes that are not too crass. And it sort of takes the bite away from the fact that, hey, you have this character, this female with a big chest who's coaching predecessant boys. It's also the fact that, you know, she, in that first episode, she gets on the field and she earns their respect. Not that she needs to get a coach, but the fact that she shows them and sort of gets them to follow her lead by showing her skills. You know, she just doesn't sit back and act like one might expect a female character. She acts like any other coach, and she shows a great knowledge of the game. Which, you know, she's a very strong female independent character. It's one of the reasons a lot of, you know, for all the people who complain that anime doesn't respect women, watch this series. The way she acts in this series, I don't see how anybody can say, oh, people are disrespectful and misconsuming about how women act. Because she's a very modern woman. But again, the sort of the comedy from Tajima, you know, just his hyperactivity, sort of the lack of confidence and sort of goofiness of that even makes the other team laugh of Mihashi. You know, when something happens, like, oh my god, he's coming, I gotta hide. His faces are so funny and they make you laugh, and it makes you forget that, oh my god, they're taking 10 minutes to cover an at bat. So that really helps the series, and I very much enjoy it. You know, final point I'll talk about is because overall I love this series, and Funimation got this series. I don't know whether they went out and got the series or they got it as part of this thing to where they wanted another series and somebody said, hey, we'll give you this series, but we also want you to take this series. And okay, let's take it. And they put a terrific voice cast. Shawn Michael Teague was a wonderful job of Mihashi, sent from the cross as Momo was great. Greg Ayers did an absolutely stellar job as Abe. And I think this is his best work. And so you have this great voice list, and voice cast, mind you, with this anime. And what do? They don't promote it at all. You know, they release it slowly. They don't even talk about it. Really, there's no ads for it. And they're selling it at $55 for 13. They split it into two parts. They sell 13 episodes for $15. Or not $15. They sell 13 episodes for $55. Excuse me. That means for the complete package, you would need to pay $110. For 26 episodes, Funimation was asking you to pay $110. Right, because we're going to do that. And then they say, well, yeah, because a lot of people were saying how good Big Windup was. And they were saying, well, yeah, but it didn't do well sales-wise. So we're not going to pick up the second season when the second season came out. And it's a microcosm about what's wrong with the industry today. And I understand that Funimation can't be completely held at fault as much as I probably want to. This is, again, the Japanese side of the industry forcing their style of business down our throats because they have legal ownership of the property. Instead of working with Funny or Section 23 or any of the other companies, and yeah, I'm looking at you, Bandai, not working with your American side of your company, you know, to say, okay, what are the American spending habits? How can we maximize the product here? Which they would probably hear, you need to lower the price. Which is what they don't want to hear because they want to be able to shove down our throats and force us to spend $89 on an anime, which we don't have. But it, you know, again, it's a microcosm of like, they're for, oh, well, you can just, to take, I'm getting ahead of myself, but to take something that Greg Ayers once said at a, panel where he was actually talking about fan subs and stuff. You know, he was talking about, like, he's sort of connecting the fact that, you know, he likes to smoke, and like, if he really wanted a pack of cigarettes, he could find $5 in his couch cushion. Well, I'm not finding $55 in my couch cushion, okay? I'm not just gonna, and yes, they have the save collection, and I don't know what the sales for that were, but unfortunately I haven't been able to find one, so that doesn't help either. But the fact of the matter is, you know, asking somebody to pay $55 for 13 episodes is asinine. And they refuse to see it, and it's just, yeah, of course sales are not going to be, well, excuse me. It's a sports anime, which already is going to have a small base. You also don't promote it, which, again, because you're doing nothing but promoting to anime fans, don't even promote to them, when really you could have promoted this to other places, as I'll get to in a second, but you don't even do that. You're selling at $55 at a price that nobody can afford. Of course the sales aren't going to do well. And it just feels like Funimation didn't want this series to do well, so they wouldn't have to pick up the second. I think they saw the series, saw how good it was. They put an excellent cast with it. They should have did effort. But really, the top crass at Funimation didn't want to pick up the second season, so they didn't promote this. And I mean, this would be an excellent series to put on ESPN. You could put this series on ESPN. You don't advertise it as an anime. You advertise it as a sports animation about baseball. Or put it on MLB Network, for that matter. And I guarantee you, you would get a lot of viewers, and you'd get people asking, how can I buy it? They also didn't want to do that, because again, if they did that, people would say, well, why is this $55 for 13 episodes? That's ridiculous. And it would force them to lower the price. You know, but they didn't want to do that. You know, at the end of the day, this is a, well, I have an opinion that I could go to ESPN right now. I could put this, Slam Dunk, Giant Killings, and iShield 21. Say, I have an idea for a two-hour block on Saturday or Sunday morning of sports animation. And here are the animations. And I guarantee you, kids would watch it. You know, of course, parents would watch it, and people would get into it, and you could sell DVDs, and you do it not by advertising this stuff as anime, but advertising it as, like, this is sports animation, this is great story, just like they did with Toonami, you know, when they were advertising Gundam Wing and that stuff, and you could get tons of sales on the DVD, but they didn't want to do that. So, yeah, again, I think when you look at how Big Windup has been promoted, it's a microcosm about all the things wrong that the anime industry has done in trying to promote anime. So, yeah, I was looking at the advantage of being able to talk about that. Overall, this is a wonderful series. I talked about how Collider Star was in my top three of the best animes of the past decade, from like 2000 to 2010. Guess what? Big Windup is right behind Collider Star for me. It's also in that top three as far as I'm concerned. This is an excellent anime. It's an excellent animation. Everybody should check it out. You can check it out right now on Hulu for free. So there's no reason you shouldn't check it out. I mean, outside of not liking animation and not liking baseball, there's no reason why you can't enjoy this series. So 5 out of 5, 10 out of 10, 100 out of 100. I love this series. Go check it out. So that's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative here on the Absolution Network. If you have any comments about this episode or want to leave any emails or fan mail or anything like that, remember there are several ways you can do that. You can leave a comment on our Absolution Network fan page on Facebook, which you can find by going to www.facebook.com and searching Absolution Network. For the future people that have iTunes, when we finally get iTunes up, if iTunes ever gets back to me, hello future people, you can leave a comment on iTunes. So keep on a regular check to see if we ever do get on iTunes. You can leave an email that you can do by sending an email to Absolution132 absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. And, of course, you can leave a comment on the post here on the website, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Remember to check out, of course, all my other sites. Of course, you have the Tokyo SOS podcast, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. Coming up is my review of the 1985 Godzilla movie there, and I'm going to be doing it with my good friend Kyle Yount. That's coming up. And, of course, there's Comic Book Crazy podcasting site. There's several podcasts, which include the Comic Book Crazy podcast, which I begin every month. I sort of review the comics I get and stuff, and comic news for that matter. Hexcast podcast that reviews every issue of the comic book Terror Witch of the Black Rose. And I will be having a special interview with the creators of that comic book, Jim Ballant and Holly Goliath, coming in May. In fact, on a special day in May. I think if you're a comic book fan, you know what date that is. And, of course, The Comic Book Pitch, my new podcast in which you, the fans, send in your ideas for a comic book story. You can find all of that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. Of course, also remember to check out all our friends that you can find on the sidebar of the site, including Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box and From Crisis to Crisis, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Slyker's Major Spoiler, Scott Gardner's 2-2 Freaks, and of course, all our other friends. You can find them, check them out, they're on the sidebar of the site. And that's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, we start Superhero Month here on the Absolution Network. And more importantly, I'm going to be covering 4 DC animated movies for that matter. So I'm going to talk a little Batman, I'm going to talk a little Superman. Hell, I'm going to talk a little Wonder Woman for that matter. So next month, next week, that all starts. So until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort. But I am not worried. For one day you will fail.
By DJ Clark Nova. Don't sleep on it.